You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, and welcome back to the Mind Over Markets podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be interviewing a special guest by the name of Etienne Cret, who is a full-time swing trader and is also the founder of Desire to Trade, which is ranked as one of the top podcasts in the trading industry. In today's episode, we're going to discuss what it takes to be a successful full-time trader, how Etienne made the breakthrough to profitable trading, the importance of developing a strategy that fits around your lifestyle, and the process of getting funded as a trader. And Etienne is going to share his experiences and how you can do it. So let's go ahead and get started. Awesome. So welcome, Trade Pros, and welcome, Etienne, to the show. And Etienne, if you can just kind of give the audience a brief little introduction about yourself. You know, we know you as, you know, a fellow Canadian that's actually making a lot of great things in this space, and we'll hand over the floor to you. Introduce yourself to our audience, and we'll get going from there.
Yeah, so you mentioned a bunch of things that totally relate to me. So, well, actually, I'm a swing trader. I've been trading Forex since 2013. I swing trade, travel the world, and my goal is to be able to help people do the same and eventually quit their jobs and trade full time. I think that in life there's a lot more to do than just working a job, a 9-to-5 job, which I've done before for sure, but I didn't really want to stick to that at all. So there's a lot of things you can do in life, and that's what I want to help people achieve.
Awesome. That's great. And I'm happy to hear that you mentioned swing trading, because, you know, a lot of what we focus on is actually day trading. And so it's going to be interesting to have you on here, you know, as a swing trader, somebody that thinks that, you know, 2 hours a day might be a little bit too much for work. So it's going to be interesting for the audience to hear that you can actually still achieve what you want with trading without having to commit to, you know, to 2 to 3 hours per day. And some of the, you know, psychology behind why you like the style that you like. And we'll go from there. So again, I'm curious to hear kind of what got you into the industry, you know, if you can think back to maybe your first memory that kind of sparked that flame for trading, and what got you into it.
First, it was just an interest into the financial market. I heard about trading, investing at some point, probably through university or something of the sort, or maybe earlier than that. And I just wanted to be able to make money in the market. That's something that kind of fascinated me a little bit. People were able to invest in stocks and different things and make money from it. And my dad, had a really hard time doing it. So he lost a lot of money in the markets. He also made some money, but he lost a lot of money also in the market during the crisis in 2008. So my goal was to kind of be able to do it, learn it, how to do it the right way, and kind of prove to people that I could do it also and make money in the markets. So that's kind of how I started.
That's awesome. Now, I can kind of recall back from my own experience, and, you know, my dad kind of also, when I told him I was getting into the industry, he cautioned me, because at the time, you know, you might be familiar with the company Expertech. You know, he invested in that and he lost a good chunk of money. And when I told him I was going to get into it, he mentioned, you know, his fatherly advice of caution, you know, watch out what you're doing. It's a dangerous game. It's gambling, etc. I'm curious if that affected you in any way, you know, as far as starting with it, because a lot of us take what our parents give to us, the advice that our parents give to us, and, you know, kind of use that as somewhat of an anchor. So I'm curious to know if, you know, those initial words of caution kind of got you more excited about the prospect of trading, or kind of made you a little bit more timid to start.
It did a little bit of both. So I've always been kind of cautious around trading and like not trusting all my money and everything. I've never blown up an account completely. I've lost some like big chunk of money in the past, but never blown up a full account. Yeah. So maybe that was that, but I've also kind of, that also pushed me to trade and to try it out and to kind of find a way to make it work, even though I didn't know how it worked before. So it was kind of like a motivation and also something kind of keeping me cautious a little bit.
Yeah, that little bit of rebellion.
Don't we all get into the industry for a little bit of that rebellion, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
At the end, I was just curious. I wanted to follow up on one of the questions that you mentioned with your dad. Like, was your dad supportive of the journey? You know, I could appreciate if it's a personal question and you want to not answer it or skip it, but like, was your dad supportive when you started out, or was his experience kind of, did it lead him to be like, look, man, you want to maybe try something different, et cetera?
Yeah, we discussed a few times about that, the fact that trading was risky and that our people online were just talking about their wins and their losses and everything around. And yeah, if, for sure, yeah, but it was also supportive in the sense that he would let me do it. He wouldn't like try to push and convince me not to do it. He always kind of had his, in his mind, a way to like have a full-time job and work like a normal job. But I didn't really follow this, and it was fine to him. And then he was pretty happy, so didn't really change that much.
That's amazing. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, in our industry, and I'm sure you deal with that with people who just start out, they feel like it's a secret that they can't share with anyone. It's, you know, because you have to perform. And I think it's kind of dangerous when you don't alert your spouse or your loved ones or anyone, you know, any of your friends, and you just go on this journey by yourself and, you know, sit by the computer alone. I think it just creates some really bad habits and no accountability. So, you know, it's good to know that, that, you know, your dad supported you, and, you know, my dad did as well. He started Forex trading. He did okay. He got me into Forex early on, but, you know, he was like, just go get it. We immigrated in this country, so you have a chance. Make us proud. But yeah, awesome. And let's continue forward. And I'd love to, you know, get your opinion on like what attracted you to the Forex market, because there's so many things you could trade, right? Stocks, options, futures, Forex. So what got you into Forex, and why do you prefer it for your lifestyle and trading?
I began with stocks the first time. That was something that I like dive in first, investing in stocks mostly, so like more long-term. It didn't work out really well. So my mom, by some random chance, took a class about Forex. Like she wanted to learn how to invest in the markets, and the class she signed up on was about Forex for some reason. So I kind of learned a little bit at the same time. It was like an online class, like a day or something, or like an evening. And I kind of learned about Forex through that. I was interested in that for sure. And when I saw that stocks didn't work for me, that Forex was like 24/5, so all that you can trade. There's more currencies to trade. You can trade coffee and everything. That kind of got me excited about it. And I just dived in and tried to learn after that.
Wait, so your mom was trading as well? Like, you got a family full of traders?
No, she didn't think about it. She just took the class and then that's it.
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I'm kind of curious to hear, you know, you started off in Forex, and, you know, a majority of people that often start in Forex usually tend to do it because, you know, it's from our experience, it's, you know, starting with a smaller capital base. And like you said, the allure that you've got 24/5 and you've got a whole bunch of markets that you can effectively trade. I know for me, one of the reasons I kind of started with Forex was because I was afraid of the gaps. You know, you don't really get as many gaps as you do with stocks. And I started off as a swing trader with Forex as well. And that's what drew me to Forex. So I'm kind of curious, you know, as it relates to your style, what were some of the initial challenges that you kind of ran into when you learned Forex?
Well, the biggest thing was not knowing what to trade, like a strategy that everyone for sure talks about, finding a strategy that's going to work for me and something that I can trade in the market. So I tried all these things at first. I was following these websites where they have like alerts and things that they tell you when to buy or like trade ideas or something. Yeah. And so that was the first tough part for me. And from there, it was just about kind of trying to control how I was trading, what I was doing in the market, and also trying to detach myself from it. Because I remember having like maybe a few hours where I was like actively trading back then, but yeah, I didn't have a plan or anything I was like focusing on doing. I just wanted to trade for these few hours. I was thinking about trade like 24/7 all the time. So that was the biggest thing, detaching myself from the chart and knowing what to do in the market. I think were the first few things that I really struggled with the most.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, initially when you start off with Forex, you kind of get lost. I want to say lost in the sauce, because there's so many currency pairs that you can trade, and it really takes a while to find your footing with the specific pair. So I'm kind of curious, you know, as you built more experience in the industry, did you find that you were kind of gravitating towards a certain, you know, a short list or such of pairs, or were you keeping a relatively large list of pairs that you were kind of just cycling through and choosing the best setups from?
Yeah, for sure. I brought it down a lot. So I trade about now 15 pairs, and that's all the pairs available. So there's like maybe 60 or something.
Yeah.
I don't trade commodities anymore. I tried it for some time, the coffee, the beans, everything around. It didn't work for me at all. So I stopped that. And yeah, so it's about 15 pairs, a lot of the major pairs, some of the minor pairs as well, some exotic pairs a little bit, but it's based on what I've seen works in the market, so my statistics, my data, and how I've seen my style evolve and the testing I've done, of course.
Perfect. So you mentioned, you know, your statistics, your style. That kind of, it's a great segue into the next question I wanted to ask. And that's more so, you know, the fact that if you look anywhere online, you know, Etienne Crête is known as the traveling swing trader. So I'm kind of curious as to, or rather, if you can kind of speak on the fact that it's how important it is to find a style that really aligns with your own personality, right? Because I'm sure what you're doing now is not what you started with, and over time you've kind of built in a style of trading that really aligns with what you believe, what you know, what you can trust, and what you can actually test. So I just wanted to get a little bit of an idea on the importance of, you know, for the audience, you know, people are out there looking for the holy grail, looking for this, looking for that. But can you speak on how important it is to really develop a strategy that fits with your personality?
Yeah, so I think personality is a big factor, but it always has to fit about, like, toward your maturity in trading. So let's say on day one, I found a perfect strategy for me in the market. It wouldn't work because it's like the first thing I found and I'm not ready for it yet. So when I began trading, strategies I found were, I think, really good. Like, to me now, they look good in retrospect, but I didn't know how to apply them properly then. Or some tools that I didn't know how they work. I would take trades all the time. I would, like, add to trades and stuff. So I think there's a part to it about maturity as well. But definitely personality is something that you want to look into. So for me, over time, I kind of started to understand that some indicators, some tools, I kind of understand or like better. And these tools for me make sense. And then at some point, like about maybe 2-3 years in, I had maybe like three strategies I was trading in the market. And I started to realize that, these two, they're okay, but I'm not that good at it. I make mistakes. It's not that easy to find or to spot the right setup. Yeah. But this strategy here, I understand it really well. And I can find all the trades. It works really well. I have a good stats for it. So I'm just going to focus on this one for now. Try to improve this one, which is a Bonjourman strategy. And so I'll just start to improve it. And that became my kind of strategy right now that I use the most. So that's kind of how it evolved. And of course, I tweak it, make it better, adjust it and stuff over time. But that's kind of how I filter and focus on what works for me.
Awesome. So you kind of created a baseline, if you will. And then as you get more experience with it, you kind of add your nuances to kind of really filter out the best quality setups, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, you know, in doing some research for this interview, I found one interview that you did, and you kind of mentioned that towards the beginning of your journey, you know, you met a full-time trader from Toronto. And can you kind of speak on what that experience was like and how it might have influenced your trading journey to date?
Yeah, so it was about, I'm not sure how long, maybe 2 weeks in that I was training or something, or sort of like really early on. Yeah. And I went to a coffee shop. They had like this meetup or something about people who were working independently and stuff. So I went to this coffee shop. They had like this session to work and focus. And so I met this guy there from Toronto, a trader in the Forex market. And I was just about to go live, or like maybe I went live a little bit before, or I was like just about to jump live. And that kind of, this guy was like trading in the Forex market, traveling around a bit Canada and stuff. And he just told me about a little bit about what he was doing and stuff in the market. What mattered for me then was more the fact that it was a sign that I could do it too. Like if this guy's doing it, it means that someone in the world is real and doing it for real. So that kind of gives some inspiration, some motivation, and helped me to kind of pursue. Probably a few months after that, I tried to find the guy again, tried to contact him. I couldn't find him anywhere. So it was kind of out of nowhere, which is kind of fun, but it really happens. That's a good thing.
Yeah. It's like your mystery man. Like you just showed up, you know, like kind got of, you in the industry and just gone. It's kind of like a fairy tale, like one of those Netflix Christmas documentaries.
That's fantastic. It kind of sounds like it. Yeah.
It's kind of fantastic though, because right, like when we first start out, there's so much advertising in the industry, then so many options that you're kind of like, just show me somebody who actually does it, just so I could believe in it, right? And I think we've all had an experience of that. I want to ask you a quick question at the end. So you mentioned that he traveled as well, and the guy you met in Toronto. So how did you spark the interest for travel yourself? Was it something that you said, I want to travel, so what kind of jobs fit with the traveling lifestyle? Or did you start trading and then say, hey, I could actually do this anywhere? So what made you catch the bug for travel and trading?
No, so the travel came a lot later. When I began trading, my goal was to be able to have a job in like business or commerce or something. That's what I was studying back then, and be able to like work a full-time job and have trading on the side like as a hobby or passion that I could kind of pursue for fun and, of course, make some money with it. So that's kind of how it began. And then in 2015, I signed up to do a student exchange in Hong Kong. So I went for one semester to study in Hong Kong, which was really cool. And then I began traveling. I began meeting people from different countries and stuff. I began to, travel about every weekend or something in Asia. And that's definitely where I got the bug for traveling. And when I was at the end of my trip, I said, oh, I cannot go back to just a full-time job. It's going to be a pain. And I don't want to do that at all. So I want to be able to travel. And I had to find a way to travel the world and make money at the same time, which I didn't make money back then, of course. So trading was a way for me to work hard and make it work to be able to travel in the future.
That's awesome. So how many countries have you been to? Do you keep track of this at the end?
Yeah, I know you're all over the place. I kind of lost track. About 30 countries, something of the sort. 31, 32. I'm not sure.
Awesome, man. And how long do you typically spend? I'm just curious because I want to, we did an episode, I think episode 30, Mark mentioned, on traveling and trading.
Yeah.
And so we kind of shared some technology tips and there's a lot that we could really ask you for on this as well. It's like, how do you, separate the travel from the work? Like, what is the routine that you have or a process that you've implemented that even when you do travel, you still are mentally fit and ready to go when the markets are open? Like, what's your routine around that?
So, yeah, usually my routine in traveling involves some work for sure, but also some fun. So what I would do is usually I would, let's say, work in the morning and I would go out in the afternoon and do things, either like do whatever I want to do, either walk around the city, go explore some places, take a cruise, go somewhere else. And I would make sure in the morning that all my setup for the day are kind of all planned. I know what to trade. And I can just, like, let's say, put alerts on my charts to be able to receive them whenever I'm outside and take trades if I need to. So anyway, most of the trades will happen earlier in the day when I was traveling. But if they happen later, I know what to trade, I know what charts to look at. Or I can just maybe every like 4 hours or something, take a break, look at the chart, get a coffee or something, look at the chart, and then enter my trades if I have to. So I would try to align the candle close to kind of like breaks in the city and like coffee shop stuff or something to take trades. That's kind of how I did it for a while. In the afternoon, I would do like every 1 hour, I would stop to a coffee shop or something, or just like on the street anywhere, look at my phone, look at the charts that I was following and see if the setup I want is there or not. It was really simple. I knew what I was looking for, like a Bong Zhiben break and then an open candle or something. So that was easy for me to spot, and I would just stop like to find that every hour.
Awesome.
And while enjoying the city, of course, and traveling. So that was pretty cool.
No, that's awesome. So kind of what I want the audience to get from that is that, despite traveling and switching around different locations, there's always something that remains constant, and that's really the importance of the routine. It's something that you can kind of lean on, and regardless of where you're at, like Etienne said, he tried to line up his breaks, the time he checked the charts with the candle closes, right? Because swing traders typically, what would you say is your, the execution time frame? Probably 4 hour, 1 hour?
For 1 hour and daily also back then.
Yeah. So there you go, guys, right? So having a routine in place is super important. And I'm kind of curious, on top of like the trading routine, is there any kind of, mental routines that you kind of run through throughout the, when you're going to be trading? Because as day traders, we try to have a morning routine for each session, right? Because we're going to be in there every single morning. And we often speak on the importance of having a daily routine. And I'm kind of curious, as a swing trader, do you also practice somewhat of kind of like a daily routine that you want to go through before you actually look at the charts?
Yeah, for sure. So for me, it's mostly about, and it might not be always before the chart, but it's things that I do every day to be able to kind of stay top notch and know what I'm doing and trade properly. So The first thing that really helps me a lot is walking. So I walk a lot in any city I'm in, whether it's like on the beach or whatever, or in the city. And I try to walk a lot because it gets me like a better clarity in my mind. I can like focus more. I know what I'm looking for. I get new ideas too. That for me is really powerful. And then when I wake up, it's just about kind of having a special routine for getting ready for the day. So I usually have like some exercise, some meditation, some kind of journaling a little bit. Even if it's not like really advanced, just like writing down on paper three things. Things I'm grateful for, things that I'm looking forward to achieve today, things I'm excited about. And just that in the morning really helps me to kind of stay focused. Yeah. And then I don't look at social media mostly in the morning. Usually I get straight to work and do social media and stuff later. So that's what worked for me. Really simple, but I've like tuned it and adapted it over time. Of course, the goal of that routine is to be able to work whenever you're traveling too. Because when you're traveling, it's not as good as at home, right? The routines change. Yeah. But if it's simple enough, you can do it whenever you travel and anywhere. So it's kind of what I follow now.
Yeah, that's, I think that's sage advice, you know, the part where if it's simple, you can keep it consistent. And I think that it also applies to trading, right? Because a lot of the time people tend to overcomplicate strategies because I guess it's like the industry allures that it has to be complicated to make money. And that's where people kind of fall off the wagon, if you will, because they might have a strategy that kind of works for them, right? But if they start to overcomplicate things, that's where it's tough to keep it consistent. So I'm happy that you brought up the point. And also the fact, you know, you mentioned as far as routines, you know, we often, you know, this whole podcast is based on psychology and, you know, how to build that mindset, how to build that performance edge. And you kind of nailed it on the head there. You know, with your morning routine, you mentioned that you meditate, right? You journal what mm-hmm. you want to achieve for the day. And then you also do gratitude. And I think that's something that falls between the cracks for a lot of people because they think it's, I just sit down on my screen and I try to do the best and follow my plan. But they kind of forego the fact that if you fail to do those things before you really sit down, you're not really in the ideal mind space to be doing what you're trying to achieve, right? So I'm really happy that you kind of brought that part up. And the next thing I kind of want to segue into is, you know, expectations for new traders, right? Because like you said, when you started, you made all sorts of mistakes and it took a little bit of time for you to get to the point where, you know, you're comfortable enough with your plan, with your strategy to execute it live. So I'm kind of curious, you know, how long did it really take before you started seeing results? And if there was kind of like a certain breakthrough that you had, because again, you know, the way that the industry is marketed is that you can achieve this kind of success overnight. But the reality is a lot different. And I think it's that misalignment between expectations and reality where traders kind of fall through the cracks. So can you kind of speak on that?
Yeah, so I think what's important to understand is that I didn't really have any expectation when I began trading. My goal was just to, I'll just make money. That's the goal. And then I didn't really have a target, which I think is good, and I have to live from it, which I think is really good. So I just went into like, I'm just going to learn and make money with it. And so that's kind of what happened. But then about 2 years in, that's when I had my like really big reality check that it's been 2 years I've been like trading and trying different things in the market. And I was doing these reviews of the chart every single day and everything consistent. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get any results in the market. And so, that's also when I was in Hong Kong studying there. And I realized that I had to become more serious about trading if I want to be able to make money from it eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's when it started like more like unfold in a good manner. So I began to meet traders, I began to go to meetups, I began to reach out to people I want to kind of study and learn from, some yeah. traders online. And that's where things really started to shift pretty quickly. I got a coach back then too. A bank trader who wanted to coach me and everything and teach me some things that I didn't even know existed back then. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how things unfolded. Then probably after that, about a year or so, even less than that, like 6 to 8 months. And that's when I saw that I was profitable for the last like 8-10 months or so in the past. So that's when I had my first profitable year of trading.
Okay. So yeah, I think it's important for the audience to kind of hear that, right? It's, you know, 2 years in, you're grafting every single day, looking at the charts, you know, doing your analysis, putting in the work. And after 2 years, still not seeing results, most people would quit by that point. So yeah. I think it's an mm-hmm. important point to make that you have to have the expectations, right? This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And the ones that stick around are the ones that make the mistakes. And they have the persistence to kind of keep going through the face of, you know, making those mistakes and continue going forward. And, you know, at the end of the day, you kind of reap what you sow what you reap. And I think that's mm-hmm. a really important thing that you kind of mentioned. So kind of curious, was there anything, you know, once you kind of got to that point where you got that breakthrough, I'm kind of curious, was there anything that really surprised you, you know, looking back in hindsight, you know, some of the stuff that you did, do you think that, you know, everything that you did in the journey led you to that point? Or was there some stuff that you think you could have avoided and still got to the same place?
I think it's really hard because you can obviously, you could get there faster. Of course, if I got a coach, like on day one, I could get there faster for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think that at the same time, you kind of have to become mature enough to kind of do these things. So when I began trading, I didn't want to hear about a coach at all. I wanted to do it on my own. I thought it was easy to trade full time and to get money from the market.
Yeah.
So it's something that you cannot really tweak and go back and change. So you got to be at the right state to get a coach. You got to be there and you got to make these mistakes first. it's really hard to succeed trading without making mistakes. I've never seen anyone do it. Well, they just go from day one, learn a little bit, and then go straight full-time traders. Never happened. I've never seen that before, at least. So that's kind of the process. Like, you have to make mistakes, you have to learn things, and you have to try things out that don't work. You have to kind of get a little bit of pain also, and to be able to get that good result eventually.
Yeah, exactly. So, go ahead, Georgie.
Sure, I was going to say, you know, like we haven't either, Etienne, like from all our years in the business as well. I think we started around the same time with the education aspect of it. You know, we incorporated in 2012. I don't think I've seen one person start and be green from day one. And I think that's an important realization for anyone listening to the podcast, is that no matter how lucky or so how good somebody seems that you're following, you know, the reality is, I'm sure there's a war story to it, right? Like, you have the ups and the downs and the downs and the even more downs. And so you just got to, like, you got to decide that you want it. I think a lot of the challenge at the beginning is just mismanage expectations, right? Like, you started a really good way, Etienne. You're just saying, look, I don't really have a goal. I just want to learn. But how many people these days start and say, I need to make $500 a month? Like, you don't, the market doesn't care what you need.
Yeah.
Right? So
that's really a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that you brought that up. And I think that's an eye opener for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. And I kind of want to shift the discussion over to the mindset kind of focus. And again, you kind of just touched on this briefly, in the sense that you mentioned, you know, throughout the journey, you kind of have to get to a point of maturity where you understand where certain things are supposed to be. And more so related to your own journey, you know, you mentioned that you really started to find consistency when you started to treat it as a business. You know, you started to apply more of a, you know, kind of business mindset. If I treat this like a business more so than a hobby, then I'm going to get the results that I want to get. So kind of curious how your mindset was when you started. And again, you alluded to that in the sense that you didn't really have any goals, not goals per se, but you didn't really have any specific targets to measure yourself from. And I'm kind of curious how that mindset has evolved, you know, as to the point where you are now, where you're, you know, successfully traveling and trading full time.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is, back then I didn't really have any structure. I didn't really have any plan. I didn't have any structure around my trading. I didn't have any journal, things I was doing in the market. Mm-hmm. I would, like, just to give you an example, I would, like, go to bed, take some trades at night, then wake up and look at my trades first thing in the morning. And I was, like, really shocked by the results sometimes. But that shows how I didn't have any preparation, any routine of the sort, any plan, any thing I was doing in the market, and I had no clue what I was doing at all. So that's kind of how it began. And what I like to do these days is, I like to ask myself, well, what would a CEO do in terms of trading? So, like, in trading, I think you should be seeing yourself as a CEO of a company, not just as a trader, because traders, like, just take trades, but you do more than that, right? So CEOs wouldn't obsess over refunds or trading losses. They wouldn't think about, oh, we have to do this now and change this now and change the plan now. They look at the bigger picture view of the market and bigger picture view of the results to make decisions. The CEOs don't get affected by whatever happens in the market or news or whatever around them. They just have a plan, they follow the plan, and they make decisions on, like a high picture. But they also have a direction where they want to go. They have some goals, but they don't focus just on the goals. They focus on how they can do things better over time and how they can adjust and become better.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point that you bring up, you know, seeing things as a CEO of your own company, because, you know, we often mention the fact that, you know, for traders, when it comes time to actually execute, you know, there's two kind of roles that you have as a trader. You know, the first one is the boss, and that's the one that's doing the analysis. That's the one that's doing all the preparation. And then once you've kind of qualified the trade, you shift it over to the employee, who then doesn't question what the boss has given him, doesn't question the analysis, but just executes on that. And building that kind of, you kind of disassociate yourself from the result of, you know, what happens from the analysis as the employee, because the boss did the work. So I think there's a synergy in there, in the sense that you mentioned, you know, treat it like a CEO, because that's effectively what the business is, right? You have goals, sure, but you're not affected by, you know, what we call it, the noise, right? You're not affected by the noise of the markets, you know, the news that comes out, etc. But you remain focused on what the strategy is and kind of optimizing that strategy going forward. So curious, you know, if you had any kind of, like, limiting beliefs when you started to find that success, you know, because a lot of the time, we think we know what we want, but subconsciously, you know, we're struggling with some of the limiting beliefs that we had from childhood. And, you know, this is why I kind of brought up the point of, you know, your father giving you those cautionary words of advice, because oftentimes what'll happen is we bring those kind of values into the trading. And then as we start to find success, you know, from subconscious perspective, you might be thinking, you know, people are successful people have to do bad things, or money is the root of all evil. And the misalignment between I want to achieve great things as a trader, and then your subconscious mind telling you that, you know, rich people are evil or money doesn't grow on trees, there's a little bit of a dissonance there. So curious if there was anything, any limiting beliefs you kind of struggled with at first when you started to find success, and if you did, how you kind of overcame those struggles.
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing was not beliefs about money, but more about myself. Mm-hmm. Things like, oh, I'm just lucky now. I've just been a few months of good trading, but maybe it's going to come down and crash again. Or maybe I'll be not lucky in the future. Mm-hmm. That kind of belief I was stuck with for a long time, and I had to kind of overcome them slowly and progressively. The other issue came when I was trying to scale up my trading, like being able to take bigger size, put more money in my account. That was a big thing also. And I think those probably came from like self-worth and things of the sort. So I had to work on that too. Yeah. And like, I don't know what to do. I have to kind of calm my instinct of like trying to be scared about scaling up and just go through it slowly, make a plan, go through it really, really slow. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I overcome it. So by making a plan and by going step by step progressively over time.
Awesome. So you kind of mentioned earlier on that you trained under a bank trader. And was that, at that point of your journey, was that where you were kind of at the point where you're looking to scale up and, you know, starting to find the struggle with those, or was that a little bit before that?
No, so that was when I was trying to get profitable. That was like in the beginning. So like 2 years in, yeah.
Okay, so that was a little bit before that. Cool. Mm-hmm. So kind of going forward on the mindset thing, you mentioned about scaling and, you know, kind of struggling with the self-worth and like your own beliefs, and you kind of mentioned having a plan. Can you go a little bit deeper into that? You know, like for the audience, I know we always mention having a plan is a big thing. We mention a plan almost every single episode, but further to the plan, can you maybe give like one or two actionable steps for somebody in the audience listening that might be struggling with self-worth as they're starting to achieve the numbers that they want to achieve, how they can kind of go about, you know, working on improving their own belief of their own self-worth?
Yeah, so what really helped me in that point was to get a coach. I learned really well from my first experience with a coach, so I decided to just get a coach and be able to learn from that person, go through some exercise and be able to do it. And that really helped me to kind of look at the mindset in a different way. So I learned about the fact that, you know, in our head or in our mind, we have different kind of parts. Some parts tell us to do this thing, some parts tell us to do different things.
Yeah.
And so we have what we call, or what this psychologist, Randy Howell, calls an orphan. And so the orphan is basically this part of yourself that kind of thinks like, or is like scared. And when you feel like, oh, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. That's the orphan in your mind telling you that, oh, you cannot do it. Because that kind of part of yourself, just hard to explain, that part of yourself is used to kind of not succeeding, failing, if you've experienced that in the past. So that part of yourself is used to like bullying or in school or something. Yeah. That part of yourself might be used to not getting the results you want in the past, that kind of stuff. So you have to be able to retrain that part of your mind to, because you're going to have these thoughts for sure, but retrain that part of your mind to understand what to do with these thoughts and kind of get back to the plan which you've built with the things you've thought through. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the long story. I hope that makes sense. Owl can explain it better than me, but yeah, that's the principle.
No, that's perfect. That was a perfect explanation. And, you know, it kind of goes further to what we mentioned quite often. And I would imagine this was probably in the first or second episode of this podcast, was kind of the difference between the subconscious brain and the conscious brain. And like you mentioned it as the orphan, right? And, you know, really up until you're around 7 or 8 years old, that's kind of the imprint period. And, you know, George can kind of add in a little bit more detail here, but up until you're 7 years old, you're basically a walking subconscious mind, right? And anything that you learn, any values that are given to you from parents, caregivers, even life experiences, those are the things that you really hold on to for the rest of your life until you do something like what Etienne mentioned, where you do coaching and you get somebody that understands these things and kind of helps you work through that so that you don't basically what happens is you get to a certain point and you have a subconscious, it's almost like a reflex, right? And you mentioned there, Etienne, you have to retrain that reflex to do the right things under certain circumstances. And George, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, you know, like the analogy I use for that is the subconscious mind's like a train, right? It's on the track. And whatever you've programmed into it or wherever you're going, you're on that track. And a lot of people, unfortunately, stay on that track and never really like deviate from it. And that requires work. And one thing, Etienne, is, you know, to work with a coach, I think it requires like a little bit of a check-in with your ego, right? It's like you check the ego in at the door and you're going into this experience open-minded. Because I think when I first started, and I heard you mention it, the coach is the last thing I thought I needed, right? It's like, yeah, screw everybody, I got this. But it's interesting because this is a business. And at the end of the day, every business has competitors, it has coaches as well, advisors, they have a board of directors. So can you talk about maybe how you decided it was time to get a coach in your career? Because a lot of people are probably facing this at the moment. You know, was it the lack of results? Was it that you wanted to get bigger results and scale up your trading? What brought you to the decision that you're going to hire a coach?
Yeah, the first time it was the lack of results for sure. I didn't know what I was doing, and I knew that coach knew what he was doing, so the bank trader. But then the thing that happens with having a coach is that you do it one time and you're scared to do it, but then you see the results of it. And the next time it's like, oh yeah, last time I did this, I got these results. So it's worth it to invest in the coach. Even if it's like $3,000 or $4,000 or more, it's worth it, right? Because you're going to get these results in the end. Possibly if you do things right, of course. It always depends on how you do the work after, for sure. But once you do it, and I kind of had a few coaches in the past throughout the years that I've seen the results with. And almost every time I get a coach, I get some new results and some bigger, either perspective shift or bigger results in the end. So for me, it's worth it. And whenever now I want to improve something and don't think about it, just get a coach on that topic. And I do the work and I usually get results after that.
Yeah, isn't it funny how it works, Etienne? Like people like Roger Federer have a coach. And like, you know, some of the greatest athletes in the world have multiple coaches. Like they have strength training coaches, endurance coaches. But we're out here competing against people in the market. And for some reason, we don't think we need a coach. You know, it's kind of baffling. I think this business is one in which, you know, because the money is the business, people just lose all sense of rationality when approaching it. It's a very interesting.
Maybe because trading is seen as easy and simple. You can make money in the market anytime you want. You can do it. People tell you online you can do it easily. So yeah, why not?
Yeah, it's like an easy job to start because there's no interview, right? The interview is you fund your account.
Yeah, and that's it. It's so easy to fund. I mean, like the obstacles to entry are so minimal in trade, especially when it shifted to technology based, right? I mean, I think we were all around for that. We're already there for the technological shift, but we've had a couple of people on the episode that were there when it was still you had to call the broker. You know, you had to call the broker to place the trades, and you know the barriers to entry were a lot bigger at that point. And so, you know, I'm happy that you kind of mentioned that there's that myth that, you know, trading is easy money because it's easy to make the profits, but to keep them, that's where the skill lies, right? And I appreciate you being open and honest about the coaching because not a lot of people will admit that. And it takes a certain sense of humility to get to the point where you're saying, all right, I've got this far on my own. What do I need to level up? And having that humility and like Georgie said, you know, kind of disassociating yourself from the ego is an important step to get you there. And so as it relates back to your trading, I'm kind of curious, you know, as far as your mindset is concerned, you know, dealing with losses, right? This is always a fun topic, right? Because the way that it's marketed, you know, you can be 100% strike rate and, you know, you can get that Lamborghini overnight, but the reality of the industry is that you're going to deal with losses. So I'm kind of curious to hear from you, you know, your mindset as it relates to losses. Like how do you deal with, let's say, a loss versus how you would deal with a string of losses? Would the process be a little bit different between having a single loss versus having a string of losses? And kind of curious how your mindset sees those losses and how you kind of work on improving once you do, you know, hit a streak of losses.
Yeah, so one loss now for me is easy. It's just like go to next trade and that's it. I don't know if you think about it anymore at all. I used to be affected by it quite a bit. But it comes down to that idea of like being a CEO of your own trading and looking at the fact that if the company gets one refund, the CEO won't be like overwhelmed and running around because they have a refund. It's going to be like calm and collected, right? So that's the same principle there with the loss. And then if you have many losses in a row, That comes down to the fact that I don't look at my P&L or anything about measuring my results until the end of the month, usually. And so the whole month, I'm just in execution mode, taking trades, doing my best to perform. Then at the end of the month, I go back to my result. And if I have a bad result, that's fine. I just find a way I just find out why it happened, what I can correct, or maybe it's just the market being random or being weird, which happens sometimes. Or maybe it's me who made a mistake in the past month. So I want to find out why that happened. And then I want to find out, I want to make a plan to fix it or just let it go and continue trading. And I might at this point reduce my size per trade if I want, if it's like really crazy in the market, or just keep doing the same thing I've done before and just move on.
Yeah, I think, that's a great point that you brought up, in the sense that like a single trade doesn't affect you, because it shouldn't, right? If you have a strategy where you're placing live capital on the line, ideally in most cases, you should have a good understanding of your statistics, right? So one single trade, like you mentioned, the CEO's got that bigger overview, right? The macro view, if you will. And they know that over the long term, you know, the data, the odds are in their favor, but short term, you know, one loss here, one loss there isn't really going to affect the profitability of your strategy. And so you kind of also, you know, covered one of the next questions in here is, as far as how you gauge success, right? And the question here is, do you gauge success via monetary results or by following your plan? And you know, you kind of mentioned there that you only look at your P&L at the end of the month. And then based on the P&L, you'll see, you know, what you kind of have to work on. But can you kind of go a little bit into that? You know, you mentioned monetary results aren't the biggest thing, and following your plan is something a little bit more important. Can you speak on why that's, you know, so important? Because a lot of people focus on the P&L, you know, whether it's red or black at the end of the month. But what gets you to that point is whether you're following the process or not. So I'm kind of curious to hear like your mindset as to why you believe following your plan is more important than, you know, that end number at the end of the month.
Yeah, so I think for sure both have their place. Both are important. Like, you don't want to just trade and not make any results or any money at the end of the month. I think both are really equal. But in a sense, if you just like trade and just aim on the money, you can take a lot of bad trades and make money with them. But then if you do them over and over again, eventually you'll be losing money with those trades. So it's all about understanding what works in the market, what's your process. And when I understood that, if I do this process, I'll be making money overall. But if I do this one and I make mistakes and I don't take these trades, I'll lose money in the end. When I understand that, then I just was, okay, I'll just focus on the process, do that. And of course, I make mistakes sometimes. I'm not perfect, for sure. So I tend to make mistakes sometimes, but then I also want to make sure my mistakes are still low compared to my number of trades. So if I take, like, let's say 100 trades, I cannot have more than like 5 mistakes on these trades. So that's kind of my principle. And if I go beyond that, which I of course track in my journal, then I have to do something to fix it. And there must be something, either it's like me who's like too emotional in the market, or maybe it's like the strategy not working with me or something. So I want to find the cause and then fix it.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. That, yeah, and thanks, man. Like, I could probably talk to you for like 12 hours. So, but unfortunately, we can't. I'd like to move on to the next section that we kind of planned here. You know, you're a host of an incredibly successful podcast. You know, I enjoy listening to it, and I've had the pleasure to be on it. So thank you for that as well. I was just curious, how did you start the podcast? Like, how did it come about? At what point did you say, hey, you know, there's some information I could give out here, and where did it fit into your journey?
The podcast came about really early on when I came back from Hong Kong from my study there, and I decided that if I want to be able to be a good trader, I had to meet other traders and kind of learn from them and work with them and stuff. So I went to a meetup, and the first meetup I went, a meetup of traders in Canada, in Montreal. I learned there a lot more in like a few hours in the evening by talking to traders and networking with them than by 2 years before of like just reading books and watching videos and listening to podcasts and stuff. Not that podcasts are bad. I think podcasts are really good, but I learn better when I'm around people, when I learn directly from people. And so then I thought, well, how can I do things to be able to learn from other traders all the time? Because these meetups are only once a month. And of course, it's a limited pool of people in Montreal. There's not like 1,000 people there who trade, maybe more, but who knows? So the only idea I had back then to meet traders was to start a podcast. Well, I'll just like interview them, ask them to interview these traders, and I'll learn from them. And why not share these advice to other people? I think other people can benefit from it as well. So that's kind of how I began, just reach out to a few people. A few people said yes, some people said no, didn't reply, but I just kept moving. Every week I would reach out to 5 new traders, people that I either knew online, authors of books, or just people that I knew or were recommended to me and stuff. And I would reach out to those people, learn from them, and interview them and share them on the podcast after that.
Awesome. And
that's kind of how it began. And it's just never stopped.
Yeah. We hope you don't stop. We hope you don't
keep
ever
it going.
Stop.
What are you at now? Like 270 or something?
It's fun for me.
How many episodes?
Yeah, 270 something. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. Congratulations. The episode, by the way, is called Desire to Trade. Not the episode, the podcast, Desire to Trade podcast. It's fantastic because we all have a desire to trade. I think that's a great name. You know, and I can tell you, podcasting is one of those things that people say, I'm going to just start a podcast. It's a lot of work. It's a ton of work.
Yeah. For me, it was fun to do for sure. It was something where I was learning a ton of stuff. So it made sense not to stop. And at the same time, it's really hard to ask people to like learn from them if you're not going to give something in return. So my way of giving them in return something was to share their stuff on the podcast. Other people can benefit from it. They get more exposure and stuff. That was the way for me that worked. But it's really hard to just, teach me this and that, and that's it, you get something in return. It's really hard to do that. So the podcast works for me really well. And it's just fun to do for me all the time. So
awesome, man. You've succeeded a lot. Like, you've got some really successful traders and guests on your podcast. You know, you got Jack Schwager, right?
Mikey Bellafiore on there.
Yeah.
Mike Bellafiore we had. Yeah, we had Van Tarp. Yeah.
I met Bellafiore in a hotel in Toronto. In the Trader Expo, he's actually a great guy. We had a nice chat. One thing about him, he's writing notes about everything. Like, we're having a little chat, and he's just filling up his notebook. I'm like, geez, what is he writing about me? he makes you just question everything you're saying.
That's cool. Yeah. Though. That's pretty cool.
So on the point of your podcast experience, like Georgie mentioned, you've interviewed a lot of successful traders, a lot of successful performance coaches. And I'm kind of curious, based on your experience speaking with these people, is there maybe let's say one characteristic in particular that you kind of notice that's common amongst the people that have found success in this industry, as it relates to trading?
Yeah, there's so many things, but I think one that's really cliche and really works is perseverance. Like, people are going to be hit in the face all the time. They're going to have these failures and stuff that they come across. Some people, they lost all their money. Some people lost their money from their father or something. They will all have these things that hit them in the face, but then they all persevere. They all keep going. And I think the other thing in line with that is they stay consistent. It's really easy to start something and do something for fun and do it like one time or a few times, but it's really hard to keep going that same thing over the long term. Like, these habits... Mm-hmm. These taking the right trades is really hard to keep going over time. So if you can do that, I think you have a big advantage on a lot of people who try to make money trading but don't succeed.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you make. So I got another question here for you. Would you agree or would you disagree with this statement that most people fail their plan before their plan fails them?
For sure. Because most people, maybe they have a good plan in the market. Maybe it's like the top-notch perfect thing they could have, but then they find, this trade could work well. This player's moving really fast now. I'll take the trade now. So they don't respect their plan. They go against it, and that's when it fails. So I would totally agree with that.
I just want to mention something, Etienne. Like, a lot of times over and over in this interview, you've mentioned that, plan, be the CEO, treat it like a business. I just kind of thought of a quick little analogy that I just want to share. Like, imagine trying to get an investor for your business. And so I think sometimes people, they look at the market too much in themselves, but they don't have a chance to look at it from a perspective of an outside person, right? And that's why we get a coach, because we have biases when we're living and experiencing the thing. Imagine like going to somebody saying, do you want to invest in my business? Yes, tell me about what you do. Well, I don't have a plan. I don't really have a process. I don't really know when I trade, and I panic every time I lose money. How much would somebody invest in that business? And so I think you kind of keep saying the fact that it's a business, this is a business, et cetera, I think gives an opportunity for everyone listening to the podcast to sit back and reflect and say, if this is a business, how much is my business worth? How much would people invest in me? And I think that's a really powerful thing to do around this time of year, especially with all these new goals and resolutions for the new year.
Yeah. And the other big mistake in that regard, finding investors and stuff, is people always focus on themselves. Like, I want to get capital. You need to fund me because I want capital in my trading. But then I think in trading, if you want to really get big and succeed and scale up and get opportunities, you have to think about what you're going to offer to other people. Like in business, right? You offer things to other people. In trading, it's the same thing. You have to be able to offer things to investors. You have to be able to give them what they want, not just ask for things and try to get capital and stuff without doing anything in return.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating point, because I think we're in a business where if you trade well, you don't need capital. This is one of these businesses that, like, I don't want to be funded. I don't want to give away my profit. If you could scale properly, right? I think if you have the right, if you need more money at the moment, maybe there's a reason you need more money, because the mindset hasn't expanded to the level to attract that money, right? It's like, it's a very interesting thing. And I say this as we do partner with a prop firm that funds people online. But I think, have you ever been in the situation where you've wanted to borrow money or to leverage by letting people have outside capital in your trading? Or do you just scale with your own capital?
Yeah. For me to go full time, that's what really helps me a lot in being able to go full time. So I was graduating from university in 2017, but I didn't have any kind of capital to be able to trade with. So I was doing this internship and stuff before. I was making some money with it. I was saving a lot of it. But then having like $20,000 is not really good to go full time. So I eventually found an investor in Montreal who was willing to give me some capital to trade for him. And it was just like really like not formal. It was really simple. I went to visit him one time. I met him at the meetup, the trader meetup I went to. I went to visit him one time in his office, and he offered me capital right then. And then I began to trade for him after that. So that's kind of how I was able to get full time, save some money with it, and be able to travel the world. I was living with really cheap back then, so like maybe $1,000 to $2,000 a month maximum, and traveling the world and saving a lot of money from this account. And we would do like a 50-50 split where I was getting 50% of the profit. And that's what helped me to kind of, first start to go full-time. And then, of course, I saved some money and went with my own account later.
Well, now I have a whole bunch of new questions, Etienne. Like, how did you feel that, taking on the funding helped? Or, like, was there a negative aspect? Like, did it put too much pressure on you? Or did it do the better part of it where that gave you accountability? You knew that now that you're trading with other capital, outside money, you have to be accountable. You have to follow the rules. You have to show results. And in fact, your whole image and brand is on the line, right? In this business, it's a small business trading. So how did that affect you mentally? Just curious, when you first started trading with the capital.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both you mentioned. So yes, for sure, it's a really good thing where you get more accountability. You feel like it's more like a job. So you have to expect you plan more. You're more serious about it. You're even more like a CEO when you do that. So that was really good for me to go outside my comfort zone, because I was before only trading my own account, like about $10,000 or something, or less than that. That's what I was trading myself. And then doing like 10 times that or something, that was a big stretch for me. And so I had to adapt to it. I had to scale up progressively and slowly. So I began trading my normal size on that account, then I scaled up over time a little bit to be able to trade that 1%, 2% per trade. And so that's kind of how I did it. But then, yeah, for sure, there's the aspect where you got to communicate with the investor. You got to send them some reports if you have to. You got to like maybe meet them for lunch a few times a month or once a month at least. And doing this while traveling was a bit hard for me. Eventually, when I had enough money, I stopped doing that. And I just went with my own account. So I think if you're good to go outside your comfort zone, do different things and try new things. But then at the same time, you should be kind of doing what works for you and what you like and what you enjoy. So you got to find out the balance between both, for sure.
Yeah, like I definitely agree that I agree with taking capital. I don't, like I said a statement earlier, like you could borrow money. I just think people look for that route a little too early in their journey, right? They feel like,
oh, of course.
Yeah, it's like, it's my way out. If I only had more money, then I could make more money. And unfortunately, it turns out you have more money and now you could lose more. It's like more lost capital. So it's, it has to be the right moment for you to borrow money. So could you, seeing as how you've been through this, and I have my own stories with this experience as well, I hated managing money or looking for people's money. It put like a lot of pressure on me that I didn't really deal well with. And then the deal fell apart of all. Anyways, like we could talk about that a bit later on. But for people who are in your situation in the past where they could benefit from money, could you maybe speak on how to know it's the right time to leverage it like that, or when you should avoid it?
Yeah, well, for sure, for me, it happened about 4 years of my trading journey. So I was not like new to it at all. I was already profitable for about a year and a half or so. So that was something that was really good. I think you shouldn't do that if you're not profitable yet. Or if you have like a few months, that might not be enough. So you need to have like the consistency, that knowing, that confidence too that comes with knowing that you're profitable, for sure. I think you need that. Otherwise, it's just about, you have to try it out. You have to go slowly about it. I began trading on that account with like the smallest size possible, my original lot size on my regular account. Then I went from there and I scaled up over time. A little bit more. Until I got to a higher level of capital on that account. So that's kind of how we'll go about it. It's hard to like have the perfect timing for everything. I don't think you can have that. But it's all about like going at it progressively over time. And being in contact with that investor too to kind of talk about what happened and make sure they understand how things work in the market, how trading works, which that guy was a trader too, so he understood how things work. He wasn't making money at all, but he was a trader anyway. So he understood the market, which was a really good thing.
Right. I think one thing I want to mention for that, Etienne, is because I've done the research for this in 2015. I was on the cusp of starting an actual fund, and I had to source approximately $20 million for it to be worth it, like to pay the legal fees and corporation. So it was probably about halfway. And you know, when I was going through this journey, I realized how much more of a grind. Like by the time you fundraise all the money, you're almost like beat up. Like you just beat up, chewed up, and like stepped all over. It's hard to start. And I think that for people listening to it, I think one of the most important things that Etienne said there was, you know, don't even consider it if you're not profitable. If you're losing money and then you leverage, you're just going to lose more. It's just simple. And it's not a linear loss. It's exponentially more because the mistakes cost you a lot more money and then emotion gets triggered. So I know when you brought that up, I had to ask you a few extra questions. I know they weren't in the show notes, but I find that very interesting because I've been there as well. I've borrowed some capital and I didn't do so well with it. I found the pressure of somebody kept asking me like, hey, how are we doing today? How are we doing today? You know, was like a lot of pressure on my shoulders. And they were also a trader, right? And they were saying, hey, look, here's some money. If you do well, I'll give you more. And they were pushing me to do things that were outside my comfort zone. Like, you know, 10% a month, how about 20 next month? Like double it. It's like unreasonable things. And so if anyone's trying to get funded in this business, I would say my tip to you is what Etienne said, get profitable individually first, but start a corporation. That was my biggest mistake that prevented me from getting funding is when it's on your personal name, it's hard for people to buy into. If you have a corporate account, you could actually open up a lot of seeder funds that'll give you more money than you imagined. Like this is a typical experience because I had a friend in the US that had an option strategy that did this. And he was like, I'm looking for some funding. And a hedge fund said, how about $10 million to start? That's, if you're trading with $20K, that's a hell of a lot of money to start out. So my tip would be get profitable first, like Etienne said, and do it in a corporate account because then you could actually source a lot of funding. You know, but I love that story, Etienne. Obviously, whoever provided you the funding believed in you. So that's a confidence booster too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was a good thing overall. You helped me to kind of get there to my goal faster and not have to have a job after university, which was really cool.
Yeah. Sometimes the best things in life happen out of necessity, right? Like, I got to do this.
Yeah, yeah, kind of, yeah.
Well, there you go. And so, Etienne, just to kind of wrap things up here, you know, outside of the podcast, you also do your own coaching and training, and that's on Desire to Trade. So can you speak a little bit about what you do, how you help traders out, and maybe, you know, as we sign off, I'd like to ask also maybe the one thing that you'd tell yourself if you were to start trading all over again today. It's a bit of a loaded question, but I'd like to hear what you've got.
Yeah, so what I do basically is I have people trade full-time, so be able to quit their job and trade full-time to be able to get more freedom in life. I want people to enjoy all the things in life, be able to travel, spend time with their family while they trade and make money with the passion that they have. So that's my goal, and we help people get funding as well to platforms and things. I think if I was to start trading again, one thing that I would focus on for sure would be to go at it step by step and try to master every part of the way. So I've been in that place where I would learn online about, oh, it's like there's psychology, oh, there's mindset, there's trading strategy, oh, there's risk management to have to focus on. So I would like try to combine everything at once, but that was a bad way to go about things. So you got to find out one thing you want to work on. Maybe now it's your strategy, maybe it's your mindset first, whatever you think is best first. Work on that, really improve it as much as you can, get to a place where it works, then you work on the other parts of trading. And also, I think for me, which I have to have for sure, is being around other traders. I think you got to connect with traders. There's meetups like in all cities now in the world almost. So you can find meetups around you where traders go and hang out and talk, and you can talk with these people. You can reach out to people online too. There's no way, like in 2021, not to have a network of people around you who can support you, of traders. You have access to all these people online. You have access to all these emails, these YouTube channels that you can reach out to. So you should be having a network of traders around you that you can reach out to and that can help you to move forward. Maybe you have to pay for the coaching. Maybe you don't. Maybe they just give you advice for free. That works too. But you got to find out a team around you who's going to be succeeding in trading over the long term.
The free advice has cost me the most in my life, bro. Everything that's been marketed as free, I've paid through the nose for. You know what I mean? Like... free is just too expensive these days.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, what you mentioned there as far as, you know, both those points are really huge, huge insight points for the audience as far as building the network, right? You mentioned, you know, ultimately the reason why you started your podcast was to help you build that network. And so, you know, the power of the trading community lives on, and there really is, you know, a power to a trading community because, like you said, it took you in one meeting with people, you learn probably more than what you did on your own in 2 years. So that's huge. And, you know, the other insight I also think is great as it relates to picking one part to develop on instead of trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together at the same time, because you'll kind of end up in that little hamster wheel of frustration, right? So that's really all that we've got on for today. I think Georgie's got one final question, and we'll wrap this bad boy up.
I don't know if it's gonna be a final one. If you give me an interesting answer, there's gonna be, like, I'm interested in this at the end. Like, I think, like, so you mentioned that a desire to trade, you also help people secure funding, right? Like, to help them get funded at prop firms. Like, can you tell us a little bit about what that process is like for new traders? Maybe what you guys look for there, and what successful funded traders have that's helped them get the capital.
Yeah, so first thing, we rarely work with new traders because these people are not ready to get funded right now. So people I work with have been trading for at least 1 year or more. And they're people who feel like they are, like, consistent now or close to it. So we have them kind of, like, finalize the last steps into, like, getting the right statistics, making sure they know what they're doing, making sure the stats work and that they know what works, what doesn't. And we go through them through this process, we make sure the mindset is top-notch a little bit. So we adjust things. We don't, like, work from scratch, but we adjust these things at last minute. And then we go to the part of helping them pass these challenges by prop firms. So, you know, these prop firms online, they have this challenge where they have, let's say, 30 days to come to finish. And the thing with that is that as you go in the challenge, you have more and more pressure, right? So your skills and your mindset and your abilities are tested there the most, I feel. So we have people go through that. We have people plan this properly, have the right risk management throughout this challenge, which should vary throughout the challenge. And then we have people get funded. But after that, we have people scale up. So it's one thing to get funded, like, maybe 10K, 20K, 50K, or 100K if you want. But that's not gonna be your end goal. Like, you got to go more far than that after. You can get private financing, private capital. We had a guy, Joel, who got funded, like, $600,000 from an investor. So that's what we aim for. We aim for people to be able to go to prop firm first, get some capital there first, and then scale up to bigger amounts and eventually go full-time and have the life they enjoy. So that's the plan.
That's awesome. So is that built into your program, Etienne? Like, is that how, like, if somebody signs
up? Yeah, of course. We have a program for that.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, I'd love to have you in for another interview at some point on the power of scaling up and the psychology of it. Because I think there's two stages in people's career. Stage number one is, like, the one they think they want. Let me just make enough money to replace my income, right? But I think stage number two is when you get there, it's like, let me just kill this thing. Like, I didn't want to just switch one job for another job. I want to make, like, more, and I want to kind of untap my potential. So I think we've covered a lot in this episode to get to the point where, like, you're successful, you're consistent, but I think we could really take it up a notch another episode if you're interested in coming back to talk about, like...
Yeah, I'm happy to help. It's good to give value. I really like to help people any way I can. So my pleasure, of course.
Yeah, because I'm dealing with that too. I'm trying to, in 2021, we talk about it on your podcast, Desire to Trade, I think 274 episode where you interviewed me and you were mentioning that, you know, what's the goal for 21. I just want to break through that plateau, and I think it's a fascinating conversation we could have. But yeah, man, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on. I've learned a lot, and it was really a great pleasure to chat with you. I love what you're doing in the industry, and keep up work.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys, for your work, and I know people are going to benefit from your podcast a lot, so that's awesome you do this, and I look forward to talking to you again.
All right, thanks, Etienne. Have a great day, brother, or great evening in Asia.
All right.
Yeah, have a great evening. And one last thing though, Etienne here, if traders want to find out more about you, more about your program, where can they go to find out?
Yeah, the best thing is the website, desiretotrade.com, or the YouTube channel. You can find me there as well, Desire to Trade. And I do this, I do videos there almost 3 times a week now. So I want to help people get to the next level and achieve their goals next year. So that's where they can find me for sure.
Awesome, guys. Make sure to check out Etienne over at Desire to Trade. We're going to make sure to link all that stuff in the show notes so you can find him a bit easier. And again, Etienne, just wanted to thank you for taking the time out of your day and helping us provide some great, great valuable insight to, you know, traders all around the world. So thank you so much for taking the time.
A pleasure.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.